This is Radio Superior 1954, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in and gather around, campers. Tim Michaels here lighting the old campfire. It's Wednesday, September 1st, 1954. Mike Simonson's got the campfire stories because Lou is off in Apollo with Harriet, and Jack McKenna is at the Red Cliff Reservation. That's right. He's there overlooking the Apostle Islands on Lake Superior. Man, they get a real campfire and everything.
I know I work through my air, straight, and everything.
This is radio, not TV. And you've got a tuft of hair sticking up like Dennis the Menace.
Hey, your mics are hot. That's engineer lingo for you're on the air. So-called professionals talking around open microphones. Good thing nobody's got a potty mouth around here.
Okay, I guess the live hookup from Red Cliff is working just fine.
We're about to witness an elaborate ceremony here with Superior Catholic Diocese Bishop, the Most Reverend Joseph Annebring, being inducted as an official Chippewa of the Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin bands. This is to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the signing of the historic treaty of 1854 between Chief Buffalo and President Fillmore. The treaty guarantees tribes their own land and stops the forced removal west of the Mississippi.
Taking part in this evening's ceremony are tribal elders, including Chippewa Tribal Centennial Chairman John Solier and Tribal Vice Chairman George Gernow. Now, out of respect for the proceedings, we'll observe a moment of silence.
So, Jack, thanks for filling in as the talent in this live shot.
Well, it's fun. We're going to have a lot of food.
I don't know why they don't call newsmen talents.
Boys,
Mom says my talent is attracting good, wholesome girls who would never, ever take her sunny boy away from her.
Sunny boy?
How's that talent working for you, Joe?
Well, Mom still has her sunny boy, and I still don't have a girl.
Wholesome girls are overrated.
Got that right.
Amen.
Timothy Joseph Lewis. Hush!
She skipped me.
Jack!
Sorry, Harriet. We'll get back to Red Cliff after the 6 o'clock news. King Optical is paying for the privilege. King Optical has glasses for one price only, $8.98, complete with frames and lenses. King Optical in the Providence Building, Duluth. Your turn at the campfire, Mike.
Thanks, Tim, and good evening. The U.S. Senate begins its censure proceedings against Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy. New England hurricane wreaks havoc on the seaboard, and Red China hands over Korean War dead. We begin our World Shortwave Report from Washington.
This is Jack Bell in the nation's capital. A special Senate committee opened censure hearings on Senator Joseph R. McCarthy today and wound up its first session in a shouting, gavel-pounding ruckus between McCarthy and committee chairman Republican Senator Arthur Watkins of Utah. The long-awaited hearing was less than 2 hours old when McCarthy touched off the fireworks by demanding to know whether statements attributed to committee member Democrat Edwin Johnson of Colorado by the Denver Post were correct. The newspaper quoted Johnson on March 12th as saying Democratic leaders, quote, loathed McCarthy. Johnson told the committee he never said he personally loathed McCarthy and that he had full faith in his ability to weigh charges against the Wisconsin Republican without prejudice. But McCarthy opened the recent McCarthy Army hearings demanding that Watkins state the newspaper story was accurate. Watkins silenced him with bangs from his gavel. Watkins, a former Utah district judge, shouted, "It is not material to this hearing. You are out of order." Quoting McCarthy, "I have a right to know." Watkins again banged his gavel. "You are out of order," the chairman said, his voice rising. "We are not going to be interrupted by these diversions," unquote. Watkins immediately recessed the hearing, the first of its kind inquiry ever held in the United States Senate and the greatest test yet in McCarthy's stormy public career. It will resume tomorrow. The committee is faced with deciding whether McCarthy should be censured by the Senate for his conduct in office. It has before it 46 charges filed by Senators Ralph Flanders, a Republican from Vermont, Democratic Senator J. William Fulbright of Arkansas, and Independent Wayne Morse of Oregon. In the nation's capital, this is Jack Bell.
This is Washington. Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. The subcommittee which investigated the senatorial Army-McCarthy row criticized both sides tonight, but split along party lines in placing blame. The four Republican members said in their formal report that the Army failed to prove its charges that Senator Joseph McCarthy brought pressure to bear on the Army on behalf of Private G. David Shine, his one-time unpaid investigating committee consultant. But the three subcommittee Democrats charged that both McCarthy and his former chief counsel, Roy Cohn, merit severe criticism for their inexcusable actions. Both groups wrapped Army Secretary Robert Stevens in biting terms, the GOP senators accusing him of placation, appeasement, and vacillation in his dealings with McCarthy and Cohn. The Republicans also found that Cohn was unduly aggressive to get favors for his friend Shine. The Army had accused both Cohn and McCarthy in the 8-week televised hearing last spring and summer of exerting undue influence on behalf of Shine. McCarthy countered that Stevens and Army Counselor John G. Adams tried to stop his investigation of alleged communism in the Army by using Shine as a hostage. In their long-awaited report on the hearings, the GOP senators ruled that Army officials did not try to end the McCarthy inquiry at the Fort Monmouth, New Jersey Radar Center. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson.
This is Boston calling Bill Cortez, International News Service. Vicious Hurricane Carol battered and lashed the northeastern states today, taking at least 45 lives in wind furies unknown here since the September 21st hurricane of 1938. In that disastrous storm 16 years ago, 317 persons perished, 262 in Rhode Island alone. Today, Hurricane Carol's death toll mounted in New England as the storm moved, hitting Montreal and Quebec City. The Caribbean-born hurricane whipped across the Atlantic coast with winds of up to 125 miles per hour and raging tides. Summer homes were smashed into kindling, hundreds of yachts were splintered on rocks, and power service was severed completely in at least 33 communities. Most of the storm-stricken communities were declared disaster areas, and the Red Cross dispatched all-out aid, food, shelter, and know-how to centers in battered Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. Famed landmarks fell. The Newport, Rhode Island casino was wrecked. The steeple of Boston's Old North Church toppled. Exclusive seacoast summer communities in Rhode Island were demolished. And many more persons are feared dead in the wake of the storm. In Boston, this is Bill Cortez, INS.
This is Paris, Stan Turner reporting. The National Assembly tonight gave Premier Pierre Mendès-France a free hand to work out a new deal on German rearmament to take the place of the European Defense Community. Mendès-France, a wartime opponent of Vichy France, promised to lose no time to work out with France's allies a substitute for the EDC. The EDC aims at enrolling a rearmed Western Germany in the anti-communist defense lineup. He also says he opposed a quick and unconsidered meeting with Russia. Rushing towards its delayed summer vacation, the Assembly voted renewed confidence in Mendès-France just 24 hours after it killed the EDC. A measure of his personal prestige in the Assembly was that in tonight's vote, he won more than a constitutional majority, 314 votes, without the 99 communist votes he has shunned since he became premier in June. In Paris, this is Stan Turner.
Hello, this is Max Jordan in Panmunjom on the 38th parallel. The communists lifted the Iron Curtain today to return the first of more than 4,000 American and Allied soldiers who died in the defense of freedom in Korea. The first to begin the last journey homeward on the opening day of Operation Glory, the exchange of war dead, will be 193 American and 7 soldiers of unknown nationality. At about 9 a.m., 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tonight, American trucks leave Glory Railhead at United Nations headquarters in Munsan for the one-mile run into the demilitarized zone that was known as Panmunjom to meet the communists at the UN Reception Center. The return of communist Chinese and Korean War dead to the Reds starts this afternoon. For 4,011 American and Allied soldiers the communists say died in Red territory, the United Nations will return the bodies of 14,061 dead Reds. The exchange is to be completed in 2 months by October 31st. The identity of the American dead will not be revealed by the UN command until the bodies are positively identified. When a body is identified positively, a message will be sent to the next of kin asking for burial instructions, and his name will be announced by the Defense Department in Washington. At Panmunjom, this is Max Jordan.
The chairman of the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, and the national broadcasting company, NBC, David Sarnoff, predicts a snowballing growth of color television. Sarnoff says the introduction of 21-inch color receivers will result in a stream of new sets from manufacturers early next year. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from King Optical.
You know, when you buy a candy bar or a package of cigarettes, you know in advance what they will cost. Why shouldn't the same principle apply in glasses? At King Optical, you know that you'll spend only $8.98 for your glasses, regardless of the lens strength and your type of frame that you choose. At only $8.98, you can't pay more. 100 styles, shapes, and colors. Prices include frames and lenses for men, for women, for children. King offers you a wide selection of frames and gold fill mountings to choose from. The 100 different styles, shapes, and colors range from a demure pink sweetheart lace through with a filigree of gold for the ladies, and to the sturdy, massive, long-wearing Ranger for the men. Shop with confidence at King. No appointment needed, no switching, no extras, all glasses union-made. That's King Optical, Suite 401 in the Providence Building, 332 West Superior Street. Phone RA25171. Mike?
Those pink lenses sound about perfect. Vice President Richard Nixon will speak in the Denfeld High School Auditorium about 9 a.m. September 22nd, following a parade down Superior Street. Tentative plans for Nixon's appearance were announced tonight by GOP County Chairman H.E. Westmoreland after a special county Republican meeting in the Spalding Hotel. Westmoreland says Nixon's party will arrive in two planes at the Duluth Airport about 6:15 p.m. A $500,000 increase in bank deposits since last July 30th reflects the growth rate of Lake Superior's North Shore. It gives an indication of tremendous future development. That from a Grand Marais businessman at a Duluth Superior Optimist Club meeting today. Our Joe Cadott was there. Good evening, Joe.
Good evening, Mike. Grand Marais Chamber of Commerce President Homer Massey predicts that today's industrial situation will bring greater prosperity to the area. Massey says taconite development installations provide lots of business. New projects such as Silver Bay and Two Islands taconite sites serve to stimulate industrial growth. In the process of planning and development are completion of Highway 61. He says that will provide the finest international traffic access in the nation, and second, linking of the Gunflint Trail with the Trans Highway, which will follow the northern Lake Superior shoreline to Kenora, Ontario. Massey says a new taconite venture has one of the largest mining companies in the United States interested. 26 company men are exploring a harbor site north of Grand Marais. Massey says there will be no desirable lake property along the North Shore left within the next 15 years. Quoting him, within the last 5 years, the 1,800 cabins along the North Shore have almost trebled in number. Massey predicts that when complete, Silver Bay will have housing facilities for about 12,000 persons. He says the Grand Marais area is crowded with resorts and motels compared with 10 years ago, Mike.
Thanks, Joe Cadott. The candidacy of Willard Munger of Duluth in the 59th District legislative race was endorsed last night by the Duluth Young Democratic Farmer Labor Club. They had a meeting in the Spalding Hotel. Guest speaker was Joseph Donovan of Duluth, a DFL candidate for Secretary of State, who reaffirmed his stand in opposition to gambling in Minnesota. 107-year-old Albert Wolfson, the only living veteran of the Union forces of the Civil War, has been made an honorary member of the Society of American Legion Founders. The announcement was made by General Lawrence Whiting of Chicago, the national president of the Society and one of the founders of the American Legion. Wolfson stayed at his Duluth home and did not come to the convention, but he sent a letter offering, quote, "My blessings from an old soldier to the veterans of two world wars," unquote. And finally, Prairie City, Iowa's W.T. Wagner was elected president of the Hay Fever of America Club last night. The delegates, all hay fever sufferers who meet annually in Duluth for its clean, pollen-free air, held the election of officers for 1954-55 in the Lenox Hotel Clubroom. Tim?
Thank you, newsman Mike Simonson. You are a sweet boy and a heck of a street fighter. Hey, cappers, here is a cool number from the Four Preps and 28 miles from Catalina on the Evening Gather Round Show.
Seems so distant, 26 miles away, resting in Roderick's O'Neill. I've worked for anyone, even the Navy, who would float me to my island dream. 26 miles so near yet far, I swim with just some water wings and my guitar. I could leave the wings, but I'll need the guitar for romance, romance, romance. Romance, 26 miles across the sea. Santa Catalina is waiting for me. Santa Catalina, the island of romance. A tropical heaven out in the ocean, covered with tropics and earth. If I have to spend my life, do it forever till I'm gazing on those islands. 40 kilometers in a leaky old boat. Any old thing that'll stay afloat. When we arrive, we'll all promote romance, 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 romance. 26 miles across the sea. Santa Catalina is waiting for me. Santa Catalina, the island of romance, 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 romance.
Ah, yes, the Four Preps and 128 miles from Catalina and KUWS. Hey, cappers, we've got a special treat for you. The WDSM-TV weatherman himself will do the honors for us on this Wednesday, September 1st, 1954, live from Red Cliff. You there, Jack McKenna?
Well, once we get him away from the fry bread at this delicious feast.
I've only just begun to eat.
With apologies to Nathan Hill, Jack's only regret is that he has but one stomach to give for his country.
Jack's always empty toes.
Good one, Hill.
if you please, the talent is at work. Let's see now. The bottom dropped out of the high cell, previously centered to the north of this region, and now extends way into the southland. Today we should receive the full benefit of being back on this side of the high. Due to the clockwise motion of air around the high pressure system, we are getting the return flow of air from the south.
Impressive.
Goodness.
Why didn't he do that when he was on the radio?
Add to that the existence of a low trough, which is headed in our direction, and you've got pretty certainty of... you've got what? And you've got a pretty certainty of showers to come. Showers this time of year are most welcome. Combined with common sense by humans, they make a good combination to prevent forest fires. There's just no match for them.
Ah, that's a relief.
What is?
Bad puns. It's the Jack that we all know and love.
The weather looks fairly good for the next 5 days, my friends. Perhaps a shower or two. The warmer air will cool slightly with another warming trend over the weekend. Remember, folks, five-day outlooks are not precision forecasts, so don't bet the farm on it. But I am usually right.
Ah, and that's a relief.
No, what this time?
Jack's modesty.
We'll check back with you folks right after we enjoy Percy Faith and his orchestra with Felicia Sanders and the song from Moulin Rouge in the Evening Gather Round Show.
I worry and wonder, you're close to me, but where is your heart? It's a sad thing to realize that you've a heart that never melts. When we kiss, do you close your eyes, pretending that I'm someone else? You must break the spell, this cloud that I'm under. So please, won't you tell, darling, where is your
Percy Faith and Maya, didn't he have a pretty voice? And the song from Moulin Rouge on KUWS. All right, campers, back we go to the Red Cliff Reservation with Jack McKenna and the centennial celebration of the Treaty of 1854. Come in, Jack McKenna, Lou Martin, and Harriet.
We're going to spend the night here. I may even move here.
This is wonderful. Apple and berry orchards. The hillside overlooking the Apostle Islands.
The food. The history of Red Cliff and Madeline Island, the hub of the Chippewa people. They have lived here for centuries.
The cooked wild rice is to die for.
And they're so polite. They insisted we go to the front of the line at the feast.
That's a tradition showing respect to guests that may now be in danger since Jack held up the line.
I've never seen anyone fill two plates at once.
Pretty impressive balancing act.
Until it became a juggling act. Then it was pretty embarrassing.
Hardy, har, har. It was the bishop who held up the line, not me. He got to go first. I was second.
Fittingly so, as the most Reverend Joseph Annevring was made a brother of the Chippewa tribe.
Now that would make him a brother three times. A brother to his brothers, a brother to Catholic brothers, and now a Chippewa brother.
No, brother.
Don't forget the best part. The bishop received the Chippewa name of Neganagishi, which means head of the day. Bet you didn't think I was fluent in Chippewa, did you?
A Chippewa brave presented Bishop Annevring with the headdress and Red Cliff Chief Martin Buffalo, the great-great-grandson of Chief Buffalo, who signed the Treaty of 1854, welcomed him as a new brother.
Hoping to prevent war with the white man, Chief Buffalo and the delegation left Red Cliff in 1852, canoed, walked, and rode a train to Washington to meet with President Millard Fillmore.
And Chief Buffalo was no young man. No, sir. He was in his 90s when he paddled and walked his way to Washington.
But when they got there, they weren't allowed to see the president.
Then something serendipitous happened. Chief Buffalo met a senator from New York who wanted to hear his story. The senator then arranged for a meeting between Chief Buffalo and the president.
I must say that there was no way Chief Buffalo was going to leave Washington until he saw the president.
Millard Fillmore. You don't hear anyone naming their kids Millard anymore.
The president listened to Chief Buffalo tell the story of how they were guaranteed their land and hunting and fishing rights from the treaties of 1835 and 1842.
But the Indian Bureau and mining speculators were trying to force them off their land. President Fillmore agreed that this was wrong and rescinded an order from President Zachary Taylor in 1850.
Good old Fillard Millmore.
That's Fillard Millmore.
You mean Millard Fillmore?
That's what I said.
Chief Buffalo and President Millmore.
Millard Fillmore, Lewis.
Sheesh. Can't even get the president's name right.
And he calls himself a newsman.
This is always harder than it has to be. President Fillmore and Chief Buffalo agreed on a treaty and smoked a ceremonial pipe of peace. 2 years later, the treaty was signed by representatives of the U.S. government and 85 Chippewa chiefs from Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin at LaPointe on Madeline Island.
And it is that island we can see from right here in Red Cliff.
What a story, guys.
What a feast, Timmy. Whitefish, herring, lake trout, corn, kohlrabi, boiled potatoes, all kinds of berries and fruit. Like I said, I'm staying here. I wonder how the bishop got to be a brother anyway.
Which brother? He's three brothers, you know, at least.
Probably better take it, Timothy.
Thanks, Sister Harriet, and brothers Joe and Jack. And remember, Brother Tim, and bring back some of that boiled fish and potatoes. Ooh, man, that sounds good. And this sounds good, too. The Rays and Silhouette on the Tim Michaels Evening Gather Round Show. The Rays and their new hit Silhouette on KUWS. Okay, Cappers, through the miracle of telephone lines, Joe's duct tape and chewing gum, let's go back to the Red Cliff Reservation with Jack, Lou, Joe, and Harriet.
I'm afraid we have some bad news, Timothy.
Especially for Jack, Mr. Glutton himself.
It isn't my fault. They've got everything backwards here.
Going back for thirds was definitely your fault.
I don't quite understand. What's backwards and what's the bad news?
Normally, I'd say it's great news and great fun.
It is, except for Mr. Feedbag overdoing it.
At least we're not getting run out on a rail like the Washburn Commercial Club picnic in 1950.
Or the Bayfield County Fair in 43.
Oh, that was the one with the pig stampede.
You shouldn't have given your pig call.
You mean hog call? I shouldn't have done my hog call.
Plus, Jack has two lifetime bans from the Tri-State Fair.
I still have cotton candy nightmares from that one.
So all things considered and no cultural faux pas ahead, this might not be a nightmare.
Don't jinx it, Lou.
except for the games. Jack can't play the games with a bloated belly.
It's really quite exciting. Red Cliff Band is playing lacrosse against the Bad River and the Flambeau Chippewa Band.
And they're playing a moccasin game, too, the predecessor of the white man's shell game.
So, Mr. X says, live for the moment and suffer the consequences later. You know what's ahead?
Of course. What kind of talent would I be if I didn't know? Folks, coming up tonight is a concert by the Bayfield High School Band. Then Indian veterans of World War II will raise the American flag.
Then there'll be a pageant with 75 people doing an historical outline of the tribe's history since 1854. A special village has been built for the event. Then a dance with an all-Indian orchestra dressed in full regalia will cap the evening. Chief Martin Buffalo will welcome Congressman Alvin Okonski and Ashland native and head of the U.S. fleet, Admiral William Leahy. My favorite will be the competitive dancing by each band.
You didn't mention that little bump in the road.
The thing that could turn this into another horror.
Goodness, I can't imagine how that could, you know...
muck it up?
Somehow anger three bands of Chippewa in one fell stroke.
Oh, sure. Blame Jack. But there won't be any trouble remembering I'm the talent.
You know, I'm not quite following you guys.
I shudder to think of the repercussions. 100 years of peace ended in an otherwise glorious afternoon.
It's too horrible to consider.
What?
Look, they're lighting up the teams now.
And there's a thick, long rope.
Time!
Time for what? What's happening?
They're having a red versus white tug of war.
And you guys are the whites?
Along with the congressman and admiral. But it's Jack's digestive system that we're worried about.
Oh, in so many ways, it's too horrible to think about.
White's over here, red's over there. Now, go, go.
Maybe a little prayer would be in order.
Oh, goodness. We have to go for a few minutes, Timothy.
Hopefully it'll be mercifully quick.
Now I lay me down to sleep.
I can't tell you how badly I wish I was there, campers. One more toe-tapping tune, and we'll go back to Red Cliff one last time. Here's Bobby Helms and my special angel, which they'll need on the evening gather round.
Angel, angel, oh, oh, angel, angel.
Bobby Helms and my special angel on KUWS. Come in, Redcliffe. Hello, Jack, Lou, Harriet, anybody?
Harriet here, Timothy. I'm flushed with excitement.
Everyone all right? How'd the Whites versus the Reds go?
Wonderfully. We lost badly, but it was wonderful.
I'm trying to figure out how Harriet can be flushed with excitement. They've got nothing but outdoor bitches here. You know, if it wasn't for that dang Congressman Okonski letting the rope go, we might have won it all. Typical congressman. Darn slippery-handed guy.
So, everyone's okay?
Jack ripped his pants pretty badly.
Exposing an embarrassing pair of undershorts with little panda bears on it.
They're comfortable.
The roof burns weren't too bad.
But the burns on my backside from getting pulled on the ground once the red men started pulling hurt the beat the band.
So to speak.
I'm relieved and happy.
Well, we're not running for our cars being chased by a mob with a barrel of tar and feathers anyway.
Congratulations, guys. Great broadcast.
Thank you.
Never underestimate the power of prayer. Right, Joe?
Miracles do happen.
We'll sign off now from the centennial celebration of the LaPointe Treaty of 1854 at the Lake Superior Redcliffe Band.
Say thank you in Chippewa, Joe.
Huh?
It's Megwitch.
What witch?
Megwitch.
Oh, gotcha. Megwitch.
Nice.
The big guy on the Reds taught me how to say thanks in Ojibwe while he helped me out of the muddy moat after they pulled us Whites across the lawn. He was sure a nice guy.
Well, that's it, campers. Coming up on WDSM TV Channel 6 tonight at 7 o'clock, it's Strike It Rich, followed by I've Got a Secret, the Red Skelton Review, and the Big Picture. Time to put up this campfire for tonight, but we'll be back same time, same campground, the good Lord willing. For Lou Martin, Jack McKenna, and the gang, this is Tim Michael saying, Megwitch.
I wonder what the Ojibwe word for copycat is.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1954, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Fahrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Don Hansen, John Munson, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1954 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
Now I lay me down to sleep.
I can't tell you.
May the Lord my soul to keep.
Start praying again, Joe.
Oh, if I... I tried to remember the words of this prayer.
That was pretty obvious.
I'll lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I awake, I pray the soul my soul to take.
There, like he says.